Hello, this is your Polycast for Tuesday, November 1st, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, stopping skyrocketing health insurance premiums for some Minnesotans will take more than a quick fix. Minneapolis officials are planning to add security guards at polling places on Election Day. Tim Nelson has more.
City Clerk Casey Carl says Minneapolis is using an existing contract with Wayland Security to add guards at all 132 precincts across the city. Carl cited contentious primaries in a city legislative race in 2014 and 2016, and also talk of sending observers to the polls by GOP presidential contender Donald Trump. Casey says state law has some strict regulations on how that can work in Minnesota.
You can be a challenger, but that's a position that's appointed by a party or a candidate for a very specific and very limited purpose within the polling place. The idea of a general poll watcher who's in there and just watching any and everything happening and monitoring and reporting, that's not allowed in Minnesota.
It's the first time the city is putting additional security in every polling place. Carl said he'd made the decision to do so as the city's chief election official. He said he didn't have an immediate estimate regarding the cost. Tim Nelson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Open enrollment for individual and family health coverage for next year begins today, and Governor Dayton is meeting with Republican House Speaker Kurt Dowd to talk about skyrocketing premiums. Consumers are finding soaring prices or smaller provider networks or both. Experts say any real solution will require a much better understanding of the problems in the individual market. Lorna Benson has the story.
Tom Bloom is looking for a new health insurance policy. Health Partners raised his premium by nearly $300 a month starting this January. It also scaled back his provider network.
On top of everything else, I have to find a new doctor now, which is a drag.
Bloom is a co-owner of a small business in South Minneapolis. He does not qualify for the government subsidies available through MnSure.
There's just a group of us who are kind of stuck, you know, making too much money and not rich to pay these kind of premiums.
Going without insurance is not an option for Bloom and his wife. They wouldn't dare risk bankruptcy because of a medical problem. If their premiums surge much past the $1,100 a month Health Partners quoted them, Bloom says he'll have to dip into his savings to pay for health coverage. Regina Anktel is in a similar spot. The former business professor retired from her teaching job last December at age 58. But her health insurance situation has her second-guessing that choice.
Wondering whether it was really wise to leave my job before age 65.
At 65, Anktel would be eligible for Medicare. Now she's on her own for health insurance, which costs $880 a month for a policy that also covers her husband. But she just found out that her insurance carrier is dropping the national network of providers that she uses during her frequent trips to the western U.S. Unwilling to give up her longtime doctors, Anktel found a different carrier that still offers a broad provider network, but she will have to pay $1,500 a month for the plan, nearly double her current premium.
We're going to eke out one more year of this, though, with our current doctors, and I hope that something can be done to make this market more stable.
The instability is hurting insurers, too. Since 2014, two carriers have pulled out of Minnesota's individual market after suffering heavy losses. Those that remain have average premium hikes ranging from 50 to 67%, depending on the carrier. Most have limited the number of people they'll cover.
This is definitely a correction, but is it enough and will it be sustainable into the future?
Kim Wagner is a benefits consultant in Eden Prairie. She says Minnesota insurers underpriced their products initially to capture a bigger share of the individual market. But since the Affordable Care Act changes took effect in 2014, they've collectively lost hundreds of millions of dollars on individual and family coverage.
And they have to make it up somewhere. They can't sustain it.
So what's wrong? It boils down to an insured population with more serious or chronic health conditions than insurers planned for.
Those medical expenses are much higher than anybody expected.
Jim Showalter is president and CEO of the Minnesota Council of Health Plans, the industry trade group. He says insurers have seen short-time policyholders drop their coverage and stop paying premiums after completing expensive medical treatments. He also says there's evidence people in government health coverage are being steered into the private insurance market because their providers will get paid more that way.
And that's a serious concern that state regulators have been looking at as well as federal regulators.
And Showalter says it's been hard to attract healthy people whose premium dollars help cover the costs of care for sicker people. Compounding the problem for insurers is the phase-out of some federal financial protections. Despite what insurers say they know about the individual market, University of Minnesota health economist Jean Abraham says there's not enough information to craft a stable solution. She says she's worried that lawmakers will only treat consumers' financial pain, not the underlying causes.
I think that if legislators are smart, they'll take a pause and really think hard about what information do they need to know about individual market functioning and who these enrollees are and what they're consuming in order to be able to understand what's the right policy prescription.
Governor Dayton and lawmakers are still considering a special session to deal with the MinSure crisis, but have yet to agree on a policy. Covering health, I'm Lorna Benson, Minnesota Public Radio News.
Middle and high schoolers in St. Paul may soon have the chance to sleep later in the morning if proposed changes to school start times go through. Researchers say teens need the sleep, but the plan is not without crucial trade-offs. Solveig Wastvedt has more.
I tried to meet up with senior Davina Newman for an interview before class, but she turned me down. Later, she asked.
I have a hard time waking up, and so my brain usually doesn't start working until about 8:30.
Davina attends Highland Park. Like most St. Paul high schools, the regular day begins at 7:30. But Davina says this year she's taking college courses through a program called Post-Secondary Enrollment Options, and she's picked some different class times.
My earliest class is 8 o'clock, so the earliest I have to wake up is 7, but next semester I won't have any classes that start before 9.
A 2014 University of Minnesota study found that with start times at or after 8:35, most high school students got at least 8 hours of sleep. Direct academic gains are harder to show. The study found some improvements, but other research that looked at ACT scores among metro area students did not uncover a link to start times. St. Paul's plan to change start times would cost between $2 and $4 million, added to the district's existing deficit. In its current form, the proposal would have almost all middle and high schools starting at 8:30 a.m., with elementaries at either 7:45 or 9:30. And that's the catch. Some parents of younger kids are blasting the proposal in social media groups and circulating an online petition. Deepa Nirmal has a second grader and a fourth grader at Capitol Hill, which would go to a 9:30 start under the plan. But her kids are raring to go at their current start time of 8:30.
They're much more energetic in the mornings and much more likely to be drooping towards the end of the day. So I don't think they'd be happy with that either.
And then there's the problem of how much more families might pay in childcare, especially in a district where 70% of students are considered low income.
If the times do change, we'd have to pay for care at both ends. There's just no way we could do an 8:45 bus drop off. So we'd have to pay for someone to care for them before school. And then I'm not quite sure how the afternoon would work.
If you're wondering why all schools can't just start at the same time, think about how a lot of students get there. Yep, school buses. The district uses the same buses 3 times, so some schools have to start earlier and some later. St. Paul Transportation Director Tom Burr explains.
The simple way to do it is we use 300 buses over 3 tiers in the morning, total of 900 individual runs. So if everybody wants to go at the same time, we would, in theory, need 900 buses.
Burr says fewer rounds would also mean shorter workdays and less pay for drivers, making drivers harder to find. One possible solution has some looking enviously across the river. The Minneapolis School District uses Metro Transit buses to transport students at most of its high schools. In St. Paul, Creative Arts and Johnson are the only traditional high schools using city buses. Metro Transit has told the district it doesn't have the capacity to add more schools. Metro Transit didn't respond to requests for an interview. The board plans to discuss start times today at 4:30 p.m. and vote on a plan November 15th. The changes would take effect in the 2018-19 school year. Covering education, I'm Solveig Wastvedt, Minnesota Public Radio News.
And that's your Polycast for this Tuesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.